crazy it seems to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their communities. How are you? I hope you're healthy. Hey, where you live, are you starting to see people getting vaccinated and stuff for COVID? It's starting to happen. I've got some friends back home that have already got their shot or their jab, as some of them say. It's going to be a while out on Vancouver Island here because the rollout is happening, but you know, I'm too gosh darn young and healthy, so it's going to be a couple more months for me. But I'm excited about it because if I get my jab, by the time I get it, then I think we're going to be allowed to travel a bit more, and I'm going to get to go back home to Saskatchewan and see everybody. So that makes me happy. We actually reserved in our calendars at the end of August this year a trip back home to Saskatchewan. So now everything just has to happen that we're allowed to travel. You know, that would be nice. But, you know, so I've given the universe a couple months advance notice here. If maybe we could like fix a few things and get enough people healthy and protected that I can travel home and see my dad would be nice and see my friends. So that's all I want. Hey, today on the show, it's Edward Tatton. And Ed is the co-owner of Ed's Breads in Whistler, BC, one of the most majestic and lovely ski resorts and beautiful places on earth and beautiful places in Canada that I have not been to. But, you know, it's renowned around the world, and it's pretty close to where I live now. Like, you know, I could get there in a day. And so, you know, maybe on my way, it's not on the way to Saskatchewan, but if it was, or maybe on that trip, this magical trip that I'm going to take in August, I can get up to see Ed. But Ed's Breads is a pretty cool place. And Ed has a very interesting story about how he got to Whistler, how he got into baking, opening up their bakery, dealing with COVID, all of that stuff. And we're going to talk about that in a couple of minutes. Before that, though, I just, you know, wanted to check in, say hi, mention a weird thing that I noticed this week. I was working on my income tax because it's that time of year, and you know, did the preliminaries, and you know, had a bit of shock on on what I might have to do for my taxes and that kind of thing. But what was really interesting is this is the first time in at least 10 years and probably closer to 15 years that I haven't declared any income from bread making or baking in the entire year, because we spent all of 2020 out in this apartment in Victoria not baking for money. So that feels strange. It took me a long time to get my head around the fact that, hey, you know, all of my income is actually coming from baking. And you know, I'm a bona fide professional baker. And 10 years later, now I'm getting used to the fact that I'm not making any money from baking. So that's pretty wild. It feels okay. Feels all right, but it is a little strange. You know, I had a dream about a brick oven the other day. Actually, we booked an Airbnb out of town here for May long weekend coming up in a couple of months. And in the pictures, they have like an Alan Scott style brick oven back there. And I made a joke when I booked the Airbnb that, you know, we went out there so, you know, we could go hiking and do the outdoor adventure thing, but we weren't able to get campsites, so we got this cabin in the Airbnb. But I'm more interested in the oven than anything else. And so I'm waiting to hear back. You know, I'm dropping some hints. Like if I came out with, you know, 50 pounds of flour, do you have enough wood that we can fire the oven up and I'll just like bake all weekend while Cindy goes hiking? But we'll see what they say. I don't know what they have for tools, but boy, that's a gorgeous looking oven. So I'd love to check it out. What else? My garden is still alive. I'm happy to tell you about that. It got cold here, but I have this floating row cover, so I put it over my little transplants, and they're looking healthy. My pea shoots are actually up enough now that the little tendrils are like grasping a string. I have a little trellis, and I saw two tendrils holding on to the string, which made me very happy indeed. Plants make you happy, especially in springtime. And what else? Oh, I have to tell you one more story before we get to Ed. So Easter's coming up, as you know, and if you are the type of person that celebrates Easter, or if your bakery customers celebrate Easter, then no doubt you're making tons of hot cross buns and Easter breads and all the treats, right? Because it's coming up in a couple of weeks. And you might even be making those traditional dove-shaped loaves, the Columba de Pasqua, right? You probably mispronounced it. mark@riseuppod.com if you want to fix it. Anyways, I've never had a Columba, and I've never made it, you know, seen them, especially when I see my friend Tracy in Saskatoon, because they're Italian, and so they make it every year, but I've never actually had it. And we were out on a drive on Friday. We went up to Sydney, but took all the back roads and stopped in at an Italian bakery, you know, in the back roads of Saanich, that had really, really good stuff. And it was like a bakery and deli. But you know how it is with COVID, right? You don't get a chance to really browse and look around. You're kind of in line and you get in and you order and you get out. And so we went to get a coffee and like a breakfast bun and some sticky buns and that kind of stuff. And I noticed on the shelf, or on a table in the line, here's some house-made, looked really, really good Columba de Pasqua. So I picked up a loaf and I said, yeah, let's have some of this. And I go to the till and, you know, they ring up all the stuff and, you know, and it's a high-end place. Like it's the outside of the place looks like a roadhouse, like on the, you know, sort of on the corner of the highway as it curves. You know, there's this kind of roadhouse thing, but inside is like really, really good looking food, right? Good looking baking. And so they ring everything up and the price comes to like $75. And I take a hard swallow. And it's like, really? I said, huh. You know, we didn't order that much. And I asked, I said, oh, well, by the way, I said, how much is the Columba? And she said, you know, $39.95. It was like 40 bucks. I was like, oh, okay. And, you know, timid Canadian guy, well, I'm not putting it back on the shelf. So it's like, all right, get out the credit card and get it. And I think that's a little high. You know, we're having a good pricing discussion on Bakers for Bakers. And, you know, I haven't heard anybody mention, you know, $40 specialty breads, but I've got it in my head. I've already rationalized it. I said that it's cake, you know. I was thinking about like $25, which would still be kind of generous, but you know, so whatever. It's only 15 bucks more than I thought. And it tastes pretty good. You know, I have to say it tastes really good. They make their own candied orange peel, which is quite tasty. Good structure, as they say. It's very, very light. It's cake. It's, you know, those are I think of them as yeasted cake. They're so rich. And so, yeah, I've been enjoying that. I've probably eaten it far too early and you're supposed to wait till Easter. You know, email me, mark@riseuppod.com. Tell me how I got that wrong too. But I don't know. It's tasty. We're about halfway through it. I've eaten about $20 worth so far. But it's cool. So yeah, so it's funny how your body works that way, right? Like you know, they're no doubt using the best ingredients and it's very skilled. And they've been making it, you know, it says on the label, like for three generations in the family and it's really good stuff. And I don't, you know, I don't begrudge them what they're charging and stuff, but the prairie guy in me had this almost lizard like reaction when I heard the price. And so, you know, it was so hard to charge, you know, ample prices at my own bakery. And so I'm not going to begrudge anyone who's got the ability to see through that and charge what they believe their products are worth, you know? And the proof is in the pudding. If the people are buying them, then it's just fine, I guess, you know? Okay, on to the main part. Ed Tatton. Ed and his wife, Natasha, started Ed's Breads, started small and then opened up an actual place in Whistler, BC. Ed's traveled all over the place as a chef and a baker and wasn't really planning on staying in Whistler for a long time. But once you get up there, it's pretty magical. And once he started baking up there, there was a big response to what they were doing. What's interesting is they're running a 100% plant-based bakery. So 100% vegan, no butter, no eggs, no cheese, none of that. And, to hear Ed tell it, people are like, really? Are you sure? Because, folks can't tell the difference. They're really liking what he's making, which makes me smile a lot. It makes me happy. So here we go. We had a really good chat a few weeks back. So happy to share it with you now. Edward Tatton, Ed's Breads in Whistler, BC. Here we go. Yeah. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you here.
I love the surfboard picture behind you.
We get quite a few comments. I've been on other podcasts and I feel like at this angle as well, they probably look even better.
Yeah, I noticed with the stuff you sent me that I said, oh wow, you're veterans. This is I'm feeling intimidated. I only got a few.
Oh no, don't worry, not at all. It's always a little bit worrying. You're not sure what's going to come up or.
Yeah, no, it's all good. No, good to meet you. Yeah, it's funny because, so I'm originally from Saskatchewan, but I moved out to Victoria about a year and a half ago. And so I knew a bunch of bakers out here and stuff, but as I've been talking to them recently, everybody I talk to is like, yeah, you got to talk to Ed's Breads. What about Ed's Breads? And I was even, Meg Roberts up in Smithers, talked to her a month or so ago. She was, yeah, you got to talk to the guys at Ed's Breads. So
nice.
I figured,
you've had some pretty big people on. I saw you've spoken to, Josie from,
from the mill. Really good talk. Yeah. That was a fun one. That was, he's a really interesting guy. And, it's interesting. Early on in this thing, I had a buddy of mine say, you're really going to do like a show a week. Like you're going to run out of people to talk to. And that has not been the case. It's just like, it just gets bigger and you start going down threads of people that know other people. And
yeah,
it's been really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I'm curious, what's it like in Whistler this winter? Like, are you still getting a few people up or is it just kind of just?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of Bonnie's obviously given an advisory that people shouldn't really travel, but I mean, Whistler, Blackcomb and Vale sort of are doing as much as they can with protocols and keeping people, in one gondola for the same household. So it's making like the lines even longer. But I mean, we're sort of the same boat in the bakery. Sort of, we're only allowed two customers in at a time. So we've definitely seen a drop in sales previously to last year. But at the same point, it's pretty consistent throughout the day. Like a bakery is kind of an essential service in the sense that people don't have to spend a huge amount of money. It's not like a fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
And they're still getting their weekly bread or their coffee or, cinnamon buns, things like that, where they can treat themselves, they can feel good, supporting a local business. Again, that's been pushed quite a lot.
Yeah.
Even more so, I feel, within the last year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, that's good to know. And so your place, would it have seats?
You would class it as a micro bakery.
Yeah, yeah.
We have six stools normally, and now those stools have been moved in front of the barista, and they're sort of to make sure that we have space.
Yeah. Okay.
But our thing, in the start was instead of saying, is that coffee to go? We would always say, is that for here? And in Creekside, we have lots of outdoor seating and we have a really nice like gas fire pit that people could go and sit, and we would encourage customers to take our ceramic cups, and trust that they would just bring them back and put them in a bus bin by the front door. So instead of wasting, even though all our packaging is compostable, it's kind of trying to get people to, and it's nicer to drink a coffee or a tea from a proper cup or on a nice plate, especially in this sort of social media world that we live in, with people taking photos, a coffee or, you know, a cinnamon bun, a cookie looks a lot nicer on, you know, a handmade plate or cup.
Yeah. So, yeah. Then the little takeout containers all the time now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you're in the business, because then if you have a really good one, everybody's looking to say, "Hey, where'd you get those from?" Like that's
totally.
Sorry.
Well, I mean, that happens even. I walk out the bakery now with my sort of lunch that I bought from home that Tash, my wife's made, and they're like, "Where'd you get that from?" And I'm like, "Oh, this isn't for sale. This is just my lunch."
Yeah. There were days at my bakery that I swear I should have just been in the roasted potato business, because if we were roasting potatoes for like potato bread or something and had them cooling on a rack where people could see, it would just be like, well, just give me a pack of those. Like, how much is that? Just like, well, I need them for tomorrow's bread. Oh my Lord. Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, and so I have so many questions for you, but I guess let's start with Ed's Bread, and then we'll go back and then forward maybe. But so how long have you been in Whistler then?
So Natasha and I moved here in 2013.
Oh, okay.
To Whistler. So, seven years ago.
Yeah.
And we moved here for 6 months just to snowboard. The original plan was 6 months in Whistler, 6 months in Montreal. I'm classically trained, worked in a lot of French style restaurants as a chef. So I was always had that, I was quite keen to move to Montreal and sort of hone my craft more. I've worked in Australia and New Zealand, obviously the UK. So I was kind of like, I like these experiences in different kitchens. You pick up little, you know, tips and tricks. And so that was the idea. And we still haven't got to Montreal 7 years later. So we kind of moved here, fell in love with the place.
Yeah. And so you were doing the nomad thing until you got to Whistler. And so it was kind of unexpected that you were going to stay.
I mean, once we came back from Australia and New Zealand, we lived in those two countries for a couple of years with some backpacking in between. We moved back to the UK. We're both from the southeast, but we wanted a change. So we moved to the southwest. So we lived in Bristol. And again, that was supposed to be a stopgap for a year or two, but we actually lived there for 5 years.
Okay.
Both gained experience. Natasha is an English teacher, so she worked at a really good language school there. I worked for a very good sort of fine dining boutique hotel / restaurant, and ended up moving up to a head chef position there. So we kind of got a little bit stuck in Bristol, but at the same point, we loved living there. It's an amazing city.
It's supposed to be beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's quite known for sort of Banksy, and it's got a lot of history with pirates and things like this. Got a really good arts and culture, music scene, very good food scene.
Mm-hmm.
So we loved it. And then when we were in Australia, one of my best friends was living here in Whistler. And he always spoke so highly of it. We started snowboarding more and more sort of within France. So we were like, you know, this is the time. Let's go and take a year out and see where we're at. We never planned on moving over here full time.
Sure.
I don't know if you ever do, you know, when you sort of choose to emigrate.
It
sort of chose us a little bit.
I hear you. Well, and it's goofy. I've never been to Whistler. I've been to Vancouver a bunch, but which is, you know, completely different and all that. But it's I've only heard stories about how beautiful it is up there once you start getting up the highway. And I can see it. I can see staying, you know. I'm curious though, where
not for everyone. It's right. Pretty tough to live here. Accommodation is expensive and it's hard to find. And everyone that you speak to has got stories of when they first moved here. So I feel like you need to want to stay, and it's a bit of a road to be able to do that, you know, you know, we decided to go through residency and all those sorts of things. It's a pile of paperwork and money. But it's beautiful, even on a day like today where it's, you know, minus 15 on the mountain, but it's clear blue skies and it is an incredible place.
When I was doing my corporate career, I came out to Vancouver and it was like 93-92. And I had a buddy that came out for the same meetings from Nova Scotia. And he was like, I'm going to Whistler because he loved skiing and, you know, but the skiing in Nova Scotia is different for sure. Yeah. So he went and I remember like in 1993, he said, you know, I can never tell my wife what I spent for this day's skiing, but it was the best thing I ever did. And so just the whole thing about like, yeah, finding a place to live, getting settled is like, that is not easy up there for new folks. But I'm curious about where in the Southeast in England were you?
So I grew up in Kent.
Yeah.
Which is right down on the coast and the country there. But obviously it's only an hour and a half away from London. So I used to spend a lot of time in my sort of later teens traveling up there, eating out in nice restaurants and things like that.
Yeah.
And met my wife in Canterbury, which is where I went to school and then she moved to Canterbury to go to university. So we ended up both working in the same bar there. Which is kind of a nice tapas style bar. She was a waitress and on the bar, and I was in the kitchen.
Yeah, awesome. My daughter actually teaches school in Canterbury. She's teaching English at the Canterbury Academy and lives in Ramsgate, like out on the coast there. She's been out there for about a year and a half. So I was able to get out there and see her just before all the COVID lockdown stuff last February, but a year ago.
Canterbury is a beautiful city.
What a place.
Got loads of history with a cathedral and everything. I went to college actually quite near Ramsgate, catering college in Broadstairs.
We were out to Broadstairs when we were visiting. It's really cool out there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's quite a well-known college, especially for the culinary arts and cooking and things like that. It's quite a few sort of famous English chefs that have gone through there. And it was really good. It kind of gave me the grounding. I feel like once I got into fine dining kitchens, I learned just as much in a year that I did at 3 years at college. But you have, you know, the lecturers that give you have a lot more patience than a head chef that's screaming at you
to get something done. Exactly. You need those first 3 years for them to let you in the door. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also it's funny because all the kitchens I worked for the next sort of 10 years, they don't ask you for any sort of paperwork. It's just where have you worked? You do a trial shift. So when we came to look at residency for Canada, that's where I needed all that qualifications and paperwork. So it's funny that these things at the time you're like, am I wasting my time? But my mum's from the education, she's a teacher, she comes from that educational background and was like, right, you're not just dropping out of school at 16 and going to work in kitchens. I want you to have some sort of, you know, education and grounding there. So she was right, and it really helped us out because I came into Canada as a skilled worker.
Totally that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, anything where you're dealing with the government, that paper is really necessary.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I had a young baker working with me back in Saskatchewan that he's from Italy. He's now a Canadian citizen, but the fact that he had actually done formal apprenticing in Italy was what helped him get to Canada. You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like I've worked with other chefs here in Whistler that have got tons of experience, you know, in Australia and things like that, but then they've come to do their residency and they've had to do their red seal here with your sort of version of it almost. And it's like going through the same, but again, they wanted to be here. So they did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so with all of the chef work and the culinary and fine dining and all of that, how did the shift to baking kind of happen for you?
Yeah, so it was quite natural. And I never, even when I started making sourdough, it's about 12 years ago in Bristol, actually. I'd made bread previously, but just yeasted breads, very simple. I've always worked in fine dining restaurants. So we've always, we would never buy in bread, we would always make it or make pasta. So I always had that creative side of seeing something from a raw ingredient to the final product. But started making in a little bistro with the owner / head chef, the sourdough, little sort of baguettes and things like that, just for the restaurant. And it grew from there, really, just working in restaurants. And then when we came to Whistler, I worked in a restaurant here And it was only supposed to be for 6 months. So mm-hmm. the head chef was like, oh, I don't really have any. We decided we wanted to stay. But he said, look, you know, take a couple of months off, come back when the summer comes around. It'll be a lot busier and I can give you more work. So Natasha and I went to Vancouver Island.
Okay.
Farms. It's like a woofing program where you work, you know, 6 to 8 hours on the farm. And in exchange, they give you food and board. Right. And as a chef used to work in, you know, minimum 12-hour days, I had a lot of spare time. So I was like, right, this is the perfect opportunity to grow a sourdough starter and get back into making that. And I can make bread for the farmers, for their families, you know, and it doesn't take much. It's not expensive. It's time. And I had lots of time.
Yeah.
So that's where sort of like 7 years ago, we were in, you know, on the island, and started creating, brought that back to Whistler, and started making it for friends. We were going to a local yoga studio, so started making for people there, and it was just word of mouth. It grew from there. If you heard about Ed, and that's kind of where the name came about. It just became Ed's Bread. It was almost friends. The name, and then eventually, you know, further down the road, the bakery just became Bread. It's simple and catchy, just spelled B-R-E-D. Mm-hmm. And Ed's Bread is kind of stuck around. Some people call it Bread. Some people call it Ed's Bread.
I got it. Yeah.
You know, the handle on Instagram is Ed's Bread. Right. Mostly because bread was already taken. So I was like,
yeah.
It's easy, you know, whatever. If it's going to bring people into the shop, then whatever they want to call it.
Oh, that's so cool. It's so neat to hear the progression of someone who's got, you know, a ton of skill already in food and cooking and baking, and then starting, like, you know, how I started. It's like, okay, well, I'm making more than I can eat, and let's start getting it out to people and just letting it sort of, well, bad pun, but organically grow. Yeah.
It was very organic. It was very sort of grassroots. We didn't invest like a ton of money. The restaurant I was working at, I was able to use their kitchen, Outer Bistro. So because they didn't open for lunch, I would make the dough on the Wednesday in the morning, put it all in the fridge, and then the next Thursday morning would bake it fresh, and the customers would just come in and pick it up that day. And it started at 30, and I've still got the book. It was you know, a list all through Facebook. They would send me a message going, hey, Ed, can you put me down for 2 loaves? And they would, and it was all trust. It was like, okay, you're going to come in, you pay it. And then generally they would say, hey, what's next week? Oh, next week's a walnut and raisin, put me down for 2.
There you go. Yeah.
And it just grew. And we started at 30, and within a year, I was averaging about 100 to 120 loaves.
Mm-hmm.
Just that one bake a week, all tin loaves, because it was 2 small ovens.
Right.
And instead of doing freeform, which wouldn't have baked up as nice, I was able to get 8 tins in one oven and 10 tins in the other.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, and the local paper did an article, the best bread in town that you've never heard of. It was kind of like, you know, Brad Pitt's Fight Club. It was the bread club.
Yep.
You know, it was very underground, and people would bump into each other. And naturally, it just went from there, really. It was the customer that was saying, hey, Ed, you should open a bakery, because there's no one specializing in sourdough at that time. And then what Tasha sort of came into that by saying, well, you know, we're both vegan. Why don't we open a vegan sourdough bakery, which is even more unique because, as you know, a lot of bakeries, they use a ton of animal products, you know, eggs, milk, butter, things like that. So that's also our USP in a way, that we're baking fresh in the morning. You can see everything. We're not sort of baking through the night. It's most of the time our customers are having warm bread from the oven. A lot of our customers now know that baguettes come out at 11:30, and sometimes they're sold out within 30 minutes. It's crazy. Right. Like, it's gone from the shelves. So that's really, really cool that we can still do that from the grassroots, starting at the restaurant where I would bake 10 batches, 15 batches, you know, at a time, and people would be picking up throughout the morning, picking up a warm loaf, that we were able to still achieve that, where we start baking at 5 a.m. sure. All the way through to, you know, sometimes 2 in the afternoon, and people just, you know, it's just a natural sort of, we bake, it gets picked up and paid for, and then we do another bake. We do multiple bakes throughout the morning.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, and it's so nice to know in a town that's really all about tourism, that you've got that group, that core group that you started with of locals that are there for you. That's got to give you some nice stability as well.
Oh, it's amazing. And even more so now, like what I used to love about when we did it at the restaurant was, because I had the book and it was all handwritten, I knew their names. So I could welcome people. I could be like, hey, Mark, you know, how's your week been? Do you want me to put you down for 2 next week? Oh, no, I'm going away. You know, I've got business. Okay, sweet. Put me down for 2 weeks' time. Skip a couple of pages forward and do that. And now, because of COVID, we're doing contact tracing in the bakery. We take a first name and a phone number. So it's always going back to how we started. And it's really nice because we've had these locals that have been coming in before the first year that we were open. And you know people's faces, but sometimes you don't have time to ask someone's name. So now so many of them are customers. The girls are really good at remembering people's names.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just, especially now, people enjoy coming in, being greeted. You know, we sometimes remember what they get, you know, their coffee order. And it's kind of just giving back to the community. And we feel even more part of Whistler now from having this hub in Creekside, which is the original village before it expanded into this, you know, hub of 12,000, you know, year-round residents.
Yeah.
We're sort of in that original village.
Oh, so cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's beautiful. That, you know, I know for me, what I discovered later, you know, I didn't appreciate it at the very start, was that connection with the individual folks and knowing as many people by name as you could and recognizing them and stuff. And that, and I found, you know, I discovered, I guess, how important that was to me. Like, and so, just your describing that original order book and stuff. It's just like, oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got an amazing review the other day from one of our customers, and he just said, I don't think you realize how much you've done for my mental health during this COVID, of having that sort of regular activity where, you know, he works from home online, and at 11 o'clock or whatever time it might be, he can walk down to the shop, get a coffee, a loaf of bread, you know, and be welcomed in. And that was really nice. That was really touching that he sort of like actively went online and said, like, these guys, it's quite old school. And like, I think from growing up in the UK, where you've got these high streets of a greengrocer, you know, a fruit and veg shop and a bakery, and they're dying out, unfortunately, these small family owned businesses, because big corporate companies are coming in and, you know, taking over these spaces. So it's really nice. It's really nice that we were able to do that for the community as well, because that's the thing. I think people take that for granted. There's so much social media of people having these perfect lives. So the fact that he can come in and, you know, physically like talk to us and have these like short conversations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 The lack of physical contact with folks is such a drag. And now just, you know, even eye contact is such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
'Cause you just don't, you know, everyone's masked up and stuff. And I even, when I go, you know, to my little grocery store here, I'm just realizing it's like, oh, take a minute, you know, look someone in the eye. It's like, this might be the only person you really talk to today outside of the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
As well, enjoy it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I've took a lot of things for granted, but I don't know. Here's hoping that, although it looks like they're saying status quo for the foreseeable future, you know, here's hoping something will turn for the better, but.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm curious about, like, when I read that you were like an all plant-based bakery and stuff, which I've got a lot of respect for. It's certainly not something that I've experienced in my own work, you know, like, because I'll use butter and eggs for sure. But I'm curious, you'd mentioned that it's like, well, you know, you and Natasha, that you were vegan. So it's like, if I'm going to start a baker, it's just who we are. We're going to do a vegan bakery. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think morals are really, people will respect you more. Like you said, even most of our customers aren't vegan themselves, but
yeah.
For us, we couldn't, as business owners, profit, you know, have these personal morals and beliefs.
Yeah.
Sort of against animal cruelty and the environment, mm-hmm. you know, and just your health.
Yeah.
I've spoken before to on other podcasts about, you know, I was born with a heart murmur, had a high blood pressure, had a stent fitted when I was 26. All these things that basically made going vegan a lot easier.
Right.
Cutting out sort of dairy and milk were quite easy to go first. And then Tash went fully vegan. She's always been vegetarian for a long time. So we always had a very hot, like, plant heavy diet anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And it was just more interesting. If I was, again, I love sourdough. She said, we can sell our house in the UK and we can invest all this money. But for me, it has to be vegan company. And I was like, I'm totally up for that. It's a challenge. It is a challenge. Like, people often send me messages and say, how do I switch this out for this? And you can't just go online. There's not as many recipes for,
sure.
you know, what to do. And it is a very experimental. But I feel like that makes the successes even more rewarding because it is more unique. It's, so I love it. It definitely is part of our USP, being 100% vegan. Even vegan people come into our shop and say, is this vegan? Is this vegan? Would you like cream cheese with your cinnamon bun? Is it vegan? It's like, yeah, everything. Like, when we say everything, we mean everything.
Yeah.
So it's really fun. I love it. It's a challenge. But there's so many great products out there that we can use. I mean, we were using an egg replacer powder for the first sort of 6 months or so, which is like potato starch and corn starch and just basically it's an emulsifier. That's basically what it was.
Sure.
And then we realized there was a few other of our muffins and things that we make that we just use ground flax and we can access organic Canadian flaxseed.
Sure.
So now we've actually switched out that for everything that we do. So anything that we need eggs for, we just use flax because it's a great product. It's organic and it's Canadian. And we know exactly what's going in there instead of also packaging. We buy it from Anita's, which is in Chilliwack, which is our local mill.
Right.
It comes in a big paper bag. So again, we try and be as plastic free as we can.
Yeah.
So there's so many of these things that we might not do it right straight away, but we're always like looking at alternatives and how we can improve as a business mm-hmm. as well. And having a meal like Anita's support us is really good for things like that.
Yeah, no, that's lucky to have that meal there. You know, I've seen in consumer sizes. When I was in Saskatchewan, I had stuff right from Saskatchewan, so I could get at that. But now out here, I'm filling an apartment, so I can see the consumer sizes, but the variety is amazing what they've got. So
they have a lot of great products.
Yeah. So it's nice that you've got access to that.
Well, they're only 200 kilometers from us. So
yeah,
it's the closest mill to us.
Yeah.
But also it's one of the biggest organic mills within Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, from a local food perspective, there's so much good stuff right where you are. You know, yeah. If you come down off the hill, at least anyways. And so it's
totally,
special.
I feel like that's what I've got. Even though I wasn't trained as a baker, having that chef background, I love creating seasonal, food, like menu
yeah.
items.
Yeah.
We've got a bunch of farms in Pemberton, which is only 20 minutes drive north of Whistler.
Nice.
And there's more and more. I think I counted we were supporting 10 different farms over the summer. And again, preserving products so we can use them in winter. You know, there's so much amazing fruit that we can get from the Okanagan, which is within BC. It's only a few hours away. So I really think there's a different way of looking at baking instead of just doing the same product year round. I sort of take my chef background and sort of add that sort of farm to table seasonal produce sure. onto the menu. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing better than, you know, when it's actually peach season to just go, yeah. you know, just start going crazy. You know, we used to do that even
yeah.
at our place, still from the Okanagan. It was a little bit, you know, we had a friend that had an orchard in the Okanagan, and her sister lived in Regina. So they always worked out a deal where they'd bring a trailer full of stuff that you could order, you know, from on paper, from the book kind of a deal. Right. And yeah, you know, you'd get once a year, you get two cases of peaches in and just go nuts, you know, and just kind of,
yeah.
and it's one shot, get it now. Cause that's all we're going to have. Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's go quick. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to watch the seasons. And I noticed that when I first moved over here, because it, especially being in Whistler, obviously being like in the mountains, it's constantly changing, and we
yeah.
get in later than what we would do in the UK. And that makes sourdough harder as well. People often ask me, oh, you do your water temperature at that, or you do your hydration at that. And it's like, yeah, but I'm in the mountains. The air is so dry.
Yeah.
A lot of the days it's so cold. And then in the summer, it's totally opposite. It's super humid. And, you know, we're in the 30 degrees plus.
Yeah.
So it definitely keeps you. I was worried opening in a bakery. Is it going to keep me stimulated? But it definitely does, because every day is different. There's no set recipe. It's changing water temperatures, changing sort of times with how long to bulk the sourdough for. So it's definitely keeps us busy.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and you were saying, like, earlier in your career, you know, Natasha was teaching, you know, teaching English and that kind of a thing, but she's part of the bakery now as well, right? Like, it's
to be a really good business. She's actually the CEO. She's the
big, there you go.
She's the boss lady. so she's, yeah, CEO, and she does a lot of the admin. She's on the ground. Like, she runs the front of house. She's
gotcha.
A very, very good barista. So she runs the coffee program, and she's amazing. Like I said, she has that teaching background. So she's very good at remembering people's names and just how to sort of get us advertising and podcasts like this, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. just driving the business forward. Mm-hmm. And then I'm COO. So I'm chief of operations. So obviously with my sort of restaurant background, I'm very competent in running the bakery and staffing and ordering and all that sort of costing and things. And then, so I think that's why we work so well together, because we have our definitive roles within right. the bakery. And I think that's key, especially any sort of partnership, but especially with a husband and wife sort of
yeah.
running together. And then we come, a lot of things we collab together. We sort of bounce ideas off each other and see what will work.
Sure.
And she's very good, obviously, at the sort of spelling and grammar. So any social media post, I definitely get her to check.
Yeah, dear.
If it was down to me, it would be a mess.
Yeah, more memories there whenever I'd post by myself. And then customers would start coming in, and then Cindy would turn to me and it's like, what did you put up there?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's good to know. But yeah, no, when I ran my bakery, it was, you know, my wife and I, we were the two partners in that. And there was some... It's difficult, but there are a lot of joy in that, and knowing that, you know, in an afternoon, you know, often driving home from the bakery, you know, you could problem solve because it was just the two of you and you're in the car, and it's like, okay, you know, by the time we get home, and it's only 5 minutes down the road, but we'll have it solved, you know, and that's mm-hmm. kind of nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And also it's if it was just one of us doing it, I think the other one would get annoyed with how much you talk about it. And
yeah. Yeah.
The fact that we're both heavily involved with the bakery, we pretty much work 7 days a week, you know, even though the shop's only 4 days at the moment, you know, we have one day where we're prepping and then two other days where we're, you know, admin or buying product for the store or researching things.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, well, and I guess you probably experience that as a chef as well, right? Like, because restaurant life can be so all consuming, and that is
absolutely. I always joke with Natasha how long our relationship has last, because most of the time she hadn't seen me, so it was normally one day a week relationship.
Yeah, yeah. And now you're there all the time together, and it's still going strong. So that's awesome. Like that's a really good sign. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, and so I'm curious with, it's almost an unfair question, especially in the last year, but if I'm curious if you can sort of see past the COVID times to say like, where, or maybe if it's more, where were you looking forward before all of this hit, and thinking that you might get there again?
So it sort of came out of nowhere, because we were a week before our first birthday of the bakery. So we opened March the 22nd, 2019.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just coming up this March will be our 2 year birthday. So we were just planning on sort of, you know, what specials we would do. We had sort of a big party planned at the bakery, you know, with champagne and things like that for the staff and for close friends. And we knew about COVID. It was hitting the UK pretty hard and the rest of the world.
Right.
And then it was a Sunday, March the 15th, which was my birthday. And basically they shut the mountain down on the day before. They just whistled back home, shut down the mountain mid-season. And a lot of people were leaving town very quickly, you know, right, to get back. You know, there's a lot of international tourists, but also workers that, you know, were basically told you should go home. Which was difficult, because we were just getting into our stride. You know, the winter is really where we see the most amount of tourism coming through Whistler. We get millions of people come here every year.
So yeah. Oh, yeah.
Businesses, you know, really rely on that as a boost, because we still have shoulder seasons, even though they're getting shorter between sort of, you know, the winter and the summer, the spring and the fall. It is quieter. So it was tricky. It was really hard. But we decided to move online very quickly.
Okay.
We closed the bakery on the Sunday, and by the Monday lunchtime, we had an online shop.
Wow.
Which we always thought about doing. But within 24 hours, we'd sort of pivoted very quickly and decided that we would do it online ordering, almost because we'd started the business that way. We were like, right, we'll run it, the two of us, husband and wife. We know we're in this bubble. Tash will take all the orders and I'll just have to make and bake everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, both laid off all our staff, unfortunately. Some of them went back to their countries they live. A couple of them stayed in Whistler, went on EI, so they had support there. And, it was heavy. It was a lot of baking on my own, a lot of dishes that we were doing and things like that, with no staff to support us. But it's sort of, we didn't leave the community. We didn't just say, okay, we're closing down.
Yeah.
We were doing one bake, so it was Saturday, and the customers could schedule an appointment and pick up every 5 minutes. We would have a customer come in, pick up from a table at the front. And then we were able to reopen the bakery as it is now. So two customers in the bakery at a time, and that was about end of June. So we've been running it like that. We've got Perspex screens, and we've got, you know, spacing and things like that. And like I spoke about earlier with the contact tracing.
Right.
So we've got all these protocols in place, and we've been told that we're doing the best that we can by Vancouver Health, which was really
nice.
We got inspected a couple of weeks ago, and they said, you know, you guys are keeping a small bubble by opening, you know, a shorter week. It's better because you don't have all these staff. We basically have a core team that we're running with. We prep on a Wednesday and then we open 4 days. So even though the customer is asking us to open more, for the safety of ourselves and our community, we feel this is the best way at the moment.
Yeah, that's right too. I never considered that once you go past the 5 days, then you've got overlaps of staff and more complexity if there ever is a problem, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Especially in Whistler, because, you know, you've got people that are in house shares, you know, some of these house shares are up to 10 people.
Yeah.
So by bringing on a new staff member, you're opening up your current staff to so much more contact with people.
Right.
We've seen it in Whistler, you know, restaurants had to close for 2 weeks. Touch wood, so far we haven't had to close again. I feel like it is because of these protocols that we've stuck with. People get a little bit frustrated that we won't serve them unless they sanitize and they give us their first name and number. But again, if we have an outbreak, we want to, they say that contact tracing is the best form of controlling.
Sure.
Most 99.9% of our customers are amazing and they get it and very supportive. We still run the online shop now. So if anyone wants just a quick pickup, or if they're coming from Vancouver and they want to guarantee that they'll get bread, they can go on edsbread.com and pre-order bread and cinnamon buns and pizza dough and things like that. And we bag it up, we put their name on it, and there's a little pickup space on the side. So it's really good. We've sort of like improved our business because of COVID. It's kind of forced us to go, okay, what else can we offer the customer that is going to make it easier for them?
Yeah. Well, and good for you. And certainly sounds like the partnership between the two of you with the breadth of experience, I guess, to look at those problems and, I don't know, not find them to be overwhelming, like challenging and not discounting the work at all, but it's sort of like, okay, yeah, we can do this, you know, and start putting that stuff in place. So like, good for you. That's awesome.
And I think also for bakers, we kind of, it seemed like the whole world was making sourdough. So it kind of was quite rewarding in a way, because I feel like so many people now have got an appreciation for sourdough, how hard it is to make and how complex it can be. So either they've made sourdough in 2020 and given up and just say, okay, you make it really well, I'm just going to buy from you. Or they're still doing it and they come in and they ask questions and are really interested in sort of learning more and making better bread for themselves.
Yeah. Well, it raises the profile of what you're doing, right? You know, like it's not just this sort of oddball thing that mm-hmm. guy over at this oddly spelled shop sells, right? You know, it's that core too. And, you know, like and it seems that I love how you put it. You know, it seems like, especially in the last year, now everybody's doing sourdough and it's just this regular thing, but it's still not. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't even a couple of years ago. It was still the oddball thing. And so, for us that are into it, it seems like a really big deal. But for the vast majority of people, it's like, what's going on? Like, what is this stuff? And so, so it's so nice. And it warms my heart to hear that you're able to keep some continuity and start getting some staff back in that. And, you know, good for you guys.
I mean, we've definitely seen a dip in sales.
Right.
Because we can't process people as quick. You know, we
have
15 people in the front of the bakery crammed in. Some people now see, you know, a distanced sort of line and I don't have time for that. I have to get to work, or, you know, they just want a quick coffee and a treat, you know. Sure. So, but everyone's experiencing that. I think that's the same thing. Our restaurants have been hit especially hard. So, the fact that we, you know, a kind of essential service in the sense that people can come and buy flour from us. We sell, you know, all the Anita's flours that we use a lot for sale on the online shop, pizza dough. So, you know, it's and a loaf of bread. So it's something that you can make multiple meals from. So it's not just like treating yourself for a meal in a restaurant where you might feel a risk because you're sitting there for a length of time. You can be in and out quite quickly.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. I still find it to be like, I haven't sat down in a restaurant yet since all this happened. And although I feel so bad for the folks running them because it's like they're trying to keep going, you know, and their rent is still due no matter what. And now they're trying to run at half capacity and stuff. And so I've got an awful lot of empathy for them. And I buy a lot of those takeaway, eat at home, Christmas dinners and all of that stuff, like whatever they're doing. But yeah, it's so tough. And, you know, I didn't appreciate, I'm glad you mentioned it. I didn't appreciate that you were on your 1 year anniversary of this shop.
Yeah.
Is that like, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, the early days, but the shop was only around for a year. That is so hard. And I've talked to so many people that are like that 1 year, 6 months, you know, a couple of guys I've talked to, like, Oh yeah, we were open 3 weeks and then we had to shut down and stuff. And it's just,
yeah, I mean,
that's so stressful.
I feel like we are very lucky because we sort of were open long enough before that we are able to apply for government assistance, and the government has been amazing. But someone said to me in the shop the other day, they were like, you know, once you hit your second birthday, you would have been open longer in COVID than pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So it's going to become sort of the new normal, but you just have to keep going. And hopefully, you know, through the summer, I'm sure we're in the worst of it now. We're going to see a big improvement, especially with people being able to be outside more, get past sort of, you know, cold and flu season. So I think there's a lot of positives coming out of it, and a lot of businesses that, you know, you succeed or you sort of, you know, reimagine what you're going to do or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm very glad to hear you say that. And it's inspiring, I think. And I think it ties back to what you said earlier about, you know, starting before you had the shop even, and just like, if you're baking for these people, and you know these people, then it's like, okay, how do I keep doing that? And there's got to be a way, you know, what are the rules now? We'll figure out a way to keep on baking for these folks. And so, I'm really glad you're able to do that.
Oh yeah. We're not going anywhere. I mean, people then now, you know, it gets to the point, they're like, when are you opening in Vancouver, you know, North Vancouver, somewhere like that. So I feel like we're just riding the wave, see where we get to, and hopefully we can get to that point.
So that's something that's in your imagination, that you could do something.
I would say that would be the next move, but at the same point, I probably need to get away from working 13 or 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, once I can get to the point where I have, staffing is such an issue, especially at the moment, because we have the tourism, but we also have international, you know, workers that can come with experience. So we've got a very small team. So it's a very niche, sourdough is very hard to train. It's not a quick overnight, to show someone a recipe. So I would hate for us to put all this work in and then try and grow so quick, you know, not even quickly, but open something else. And then someone say, oh, I used to love it when Ed was there. You know, I really want to keep those standards. It's not just about opening up loads and loads of different stores. It's about keeping that quality and the same feel, that when people come in, the product's exactly the same as it always was, and how they, you know, are served, be it by Natasha, my wife, or one of our staff, that they have the same experience. Yeah. So I think once we get to the stage where it can be run how we want it to be in the same way, then potentially we could look at another store. But
right on.
We never opened bread to make, you know, to be millionaires. It's almost like someone asked us, like, are you opening a business or are you buying yourself a job? And it's a bit of both, really. It's kind of, we created a job in a town that, you know, it is quite small. We'll see. Maybe in a few years' time.
For sure. But even just framing it as like the roles you've got as, you know, CEO and, you know, marketing front of house and COO, and I've got the back and that kind of thing. And with your restaurant experience and stuff, it's like, it sounds like you can see the pathway. You just get get to decide whether or not you take the path, right?
And that's, I feel like it's organically grown.
Yeah.
From the start. So if the opportunity comes up and there's a space that we're like, this is going to work in an area that we think will work, it's always a bit of a gamble, but, yeah, I think we'll definitely take that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Financially, we need to recover a bit first.
Oh, God, goodness. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who knows? It might be find the guy that's going to be the baker down there, give him the notebook and say, go start filling that notebook up with orders. And then we'll see if there's a store in the works. I know you're a busy guy and I don't want to take up too much of your time. I just want to thank you for sharing your story, for one.
No, I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Very, very inspiring.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I get that a few people like send us messages, and I always welcome people to, you know, the best way to contact me is through Instagram directly. If any of your listeners have any, you know, baking related questions or starting a business or anything, it's Eds underscore bread. So EDS underscore BRED on Instagram, and people can just sort of like hit me a message. I'm not always the quickest, but I'll always try and respond to any messages. But for sure, you know, I'm a fan of your podcast, and I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, enthusiastic bakers and professionals that listen along as well.
Cool. Oh, well, thanks so much. And that was Ed. When I was listening to it again, I realized, hey, this show's coming out on the week of their second anniversary of Ed's Breads. So congratulations, Ed's Breads. I hope you had a bit of a party this go round. It's sad that how your first anniversary party kind of got really messed up with the COVID lockdown. I hope you were able to have a good socially distanced bash, maybe outdoors in the town square this go round, because you deserve it. You know, anybody that keeps their business going in all of this COVID mayhem, you know, especially in a resort town where folks aren't traveling up there and stuff. And it's like, you know, my hat's off to you. And honestly, you know, maybe it's a good thing, right? Because now you've got the strong support of the locals, the year-round folks. And if that's enough to sustain you, then when the tourists come, that's just gravy, right? Or plant-based gravy. And so, yeah, really interesting guy. I love the England connection too. You know, I miss my daughter a lot. And so it was nice to hear that he grew up where she is now. And I actually knew some of the places that he was mentioning. So that's pretty cool. So I hope you enjoyed the talk. I enjoyed sharing it with you. I enjoyed talking to Ed, and I enjoy sharing it with you. So I get twice the fun every time I do one of these interviews. I'm glad that you're listening. I really am. If you are new to the show, maybe you're a friend of Ed and this is the first time you've heard of the show, there's 125 other interviews with bakers from all over the world, and they're all there at riseuppod.com. There's no paywall on this thing. There's none of this, oh, the first 10 are available and everything else you have to pay for or something like that. They're all there. You can binge for a month and a half if you want to, and I'd love it if you did. And if that makes you happy and you want to help me out while you do that, just head back to riseuppod.com. There's a little button on the main screen called Support the Show. And if you feel up to giving me a one-time donation or maybe a couple bucks a month, because there's a month-over-month donation option, I would really appreciate it. The money that I bring in from the Support the Show button goes back into the show. It pays for the hosting. It pays for gear. It pays for Zoom rooms and podcast hosting and audio processing and all of that stuff. That all adds up. It doesn't pay for the Columba to Pasqua. I want to be clear on that. I pay for that through other means. But it helps the show out. And it helps keep the show going. It helps keep Bakers for Bakers going. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for every time I get a little ping that somebody's left a couple dollars. It makes me very happy. So have a great week. Bake up a storm. Easter's coming. Keep on going. Keep on making the good stuff. And I'll talk to you next week with another chat with another baker. Happy baking. Bye-bye.